Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Tired of nicks, cuts, and bumps? It's time to ditch the blade. Nair, the award-winning number one hair removal brand, gives you silky, smooth skin in as little as 3 minutes. That's smooth that lasts for days longer than shaving. Easy to use, blade-free, dermatologist tested, and made for all skin types. Plus, discover our new sensational fragrances that turn hair removal into a whole vibe. Shave less, glow more. Find Nair at all major retailers.
I'm here to help.
On August 21st,
we have a story.
Mutiny arrives on the big screen.
Who are you?
It is, trust me.
Jason Statham stars in the action movie to end your summer.
What do you want?
Vengeance.
Mutiny. Rated R.
Welcome on into Project Big Screen, episode 28. Jeff D. Lowe alongside Kirk, Kenjack, Gooch, Klemmer. Coming at you with the next 10 movies today and our top 50 movies of the century so far, 2000 through 2025. We also have two reviews. One of the movie Outcome, directed by Jonah Hill. Starring Keanu Reeves, a take on cancel culture. Sounds, I know, thrilling. And then a review for the movie You, Me, and Tuscany. And now the reason, if you're listening to this, you're not going to notice any difference. But if you're watching this, it's only me right now. We don't have the video for the You, Me, and Tuscany review, but we do have the audio. So you're not going to see us for that, but then everything after that, the list, Outcome, you will see us. So let's get right into it with a review for You, Me, and Tuscany. All right, Project Big Screen, episode 28, April 12th, 2026. We are recording this halfway through the month of April, inching ever so closer to blockbuster season, which I would say
we're here.
Kind of the cusp of. I think Devil Wears Prada 2 is coming out soon. That feels like a big one. Mario still making a lot of money. Some pretty good things happening right now at the box office. I will say I have a small box office rant later. Just a little tease for the people. On this episode, we have two incredibly different movies. We have a cookie cutter rom-com and then a response to cancel culture. how intriguing does that sound? And if that doesn't sound too intriguing, stick around because the big ticket item is we are continuing our top 50 movies of the century so far, 2000 through 2025. We had a good bit of fun last week, and a cool crop of 10 movies, the next 10 movies. Very different grouping of movies, I feel like, this week than last week. Maybe some bigger name movies as well. But first, let's start out with You, Me, and Tuscany. Oh, boy. I'm going to preface this very quickly off the top. I am very curious to see which movie people disliked more out of these two movies. You, Me, and Tuscany is first, and Outcome, a new movie from Jonah Hill, is second. But first up, a free-spirited American chef and reserved British lawyer embark on a whirlwind romance during a destination wedding in coastal Italy. She came for the pasta, got lost in the sauce. It's one of the greatest taglines of a movie I've ever heard.
I thought it was going to be Imagine the Possibilities is what I thought.
Yeah.
What can you do?
1 hour and 45 minutes long. Kat Coro, I think you say her name. Coiro. She did Marry Me, which was a movie with Jennifer Lopez and Owen Wilson from a couple years ago, from 2022. That was one of those movies that, and to be fair, The Holdovers was like this too. That's one of those movies that, like, they didn't play the trailer. It was like a commercial for the movie before the trailers. It's like wedged in with like the M&M commercials where it's like, is that like a real movie? What is that? That came out a couple years ago. Hailey Bailey, Regis Jean Page, I say his name. I never know how to say this guy's fucking name. Marco Calvani, bunch of Italian people. She was most recently in Little Mermaid, projected to make $3.1 million domestically. Not exactly a big...
It'll make more than that.
Yeah, it's going to make like 12.
Right? It's going to be 3-1 on Friday, I think.
Yeah.
Twice.
Don't ever knock the box office of You, Me, and Tuscany. Ever,
he was doing it in euros. To be fair, it was conversion problem.
68% Rotten Tomatoes, 84% split.
Unfucking believable. What the fuck?
6.5 IMDb, 53 Metacritic, 5.0, and then Letterboxd 3.0. We'll start out. Clemmer, you wrote kind of almost what I would call a manifesto about this movie on Letterboxd. I will let you.
Really?
No, I'm just yes. You just had the longest review out of the group, so I'm going to let you start. Oh. You Me in Tuscany.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just not a rom-com guy. I love a good story in a movie, and this just, I mean, rom-coms are just, you get the same thing every time. The only difference is, like, how interesting are the supporting characters? How much do you care about the leads? Like, it's the same thing every time. And this was weaker than most, somehow. I did not find the supporting characters to be funny or entertaining. I did not care about them. I didn't really even like the leads. Was it Halle Bailey? I don't think she's a very good actress. Like, I just don't, the only, like, saving grace of this movie where there's some pretty beautiful shots of Tuscany, like, but like compare this to like Solo Mio, which is also a rom-com. That's just a better movie. That was better because it took some unique chances at times. This did not take a single chance. Also, shame on the marketing. They in this trailer, you see the end of the movie. Like half of the trailer is the end of the movie. Like that is like so ridiculous. They gotta stop doing that shit. This movie, I had 39. I don't know.
39 out of 100. Sure. Okay. Ken, Jack, what'd you think?
I think I'm like maybe just a slightly, like a tad above Clemmer. Like it's a 45 out of 100 to me. And I think it's the definition of like just below fine. And I think that movies like this have an important purpose. Because I think you need like a 3-star, 2.5-star rom-com in theaters 52 weeks a year. And I you just need that. People need to be able to go to take a date to a movie that they're going to talk about years later. Like, for me, that's what's the Bruce or the Jim Carrey movie where you can't say no to anything? Yes Man, is that it?
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, like that's the one. That was it for me. That was the first date I went on, was to go see Yes Man with Jim Carrey, and it was the definition of a 2.5-star movie rom-com. Not good, but I remember it, and I think movies like that should be around in theaters all the time. But it's just lacking something to take it into that next level. And I think what might have hurt it is what Clemmer mentioned: Solo Mio coming out 2 months or a month and change before this, and doing a lot of the same stuff, but having more heart, shot better, and at least like bending against cliche with having like normal looking people instead of like traditionally handsome archetypes like Reggae John Page. I feel like that just did something a little bit more to take it into that next level. It's totally fine. I'd love for more American rom-coms to be shot out in Europe instead of in like Vancouver and New Orleans or Atlanta, but it's just missing that extra something to take it to the next level. So 45 out of 100 for me.
Okay, Kirk, what do you think? You, Me, and Tuscany.
Yeah, I think given there was like 4 people in the theater, and if I'm going to be fully honest, Jim Nance was narrating a lot of this movie for me in my headphones as I was watching The Masters. I'm going to be totally honest. I just like to, you know, I can look at Tuscany all day. I don't. So demographically, like I used to have a show, The Kirk Minahan Show at Barstool, and it was all guys. Now I have a true crime podcast. It's all women who listen to it. Like, is it all guys who listen to this podcast, or is it pretty mixed?
I would say we have a male slant, okay, for sure.
Then why are we even, what's the point of even reviewing? No fucking guy is going to go see this movie. Why are we doing this? Why are you putting ourselves to this torture of watching You, Me, and Tuscany? I don't even know.
Is it a good date movie? I'm not even sure it is.
I was alone like a creep with my headphones, and I have no idea. I mean, it's like, I can't even review this movie fairly. It was like, whatever. Like, I don't know. That guy was really good in Black Bag last year.
Yeah,
it kind of bummed me out to see him in this movie running around. I also like the Clemmer like thinks that like we're not gonna know what the ending of this movie is anyway. Like,
that's not it.
What is this? Chris Benoit gonna roll in and murder everyone at the end of it? Like, it's
You, Me, and Tuscany problem. This is an issue.
It's not just a You, Me, and Tuscany problem.
This is not. No, they gotta stop doing this shit with showing the whole movie in the trailers. That's a valid argument.
I don't want to spoil the ending of this, but things work out okay. I'll just say that.
And I'm annoyed. You see where it works out. You can't do that.
And the guy from the Four Seasons is in it. I'm kind of annoyed with him. I know, like, I got to sit through him for season 2. He's the cab driver in this, right? What's his face? The guy. You know, I don't. It's fine. She's kind of a zero. I think I'm not really. I don't think she's gonna be around for. I don't think she's on a big long run in her career. But like, as a romantic comedy, whatever. You want to take your girlfriend if you're like 20? To Ken Jack's point, you can sit through this. I'll give it a. It's not as good as Hamnet. I'll give it a 26.
To the point of the date thing, like the other ones you can go see, and even in like Lincoln Center, you could go see Super Mario Galaxy Movie, Hoppers, Exit 8, or like the drama. And the, all these would be either like kind of risk or like, I don't know if I necessarily want to bring a date to that. Like a dumb, stupid date movie, I think should be in theaters all the time.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you're, well, I'll have Gooch go next. I'd rather this than something, another type of movie. We'll get to that in a second though. Gooch, what'd you give it?
Just want to say off the top, I mean, holy shittily, that was such a, what a line. And I'm surprised Kirk, you didn't like this more. The Sideways reference. Come on. She felt like Paul Giamatti in Sideways.
I might have missed it, if I'm being honest. I think I was watching Patrick Reed butcher one of them.
That was definitely, that was a line, that a Sideways reference was written before anything else in the movie. You're like, we got to put that in there. We got to do it.
The writer's room had a list of movies that they were going to ham fist references in, like no matter what. I guess the Diane Lane Tuscan Sun one just does make sense, but there were a few in there that I was like, no one in this audience is understanding these references. Not a soul. This isn't a good movie. It's not a good movie. I think it is self-aware at points that it isn't good and kind of leans into the camp, but never fully gets there. So like Reggie Jean Page is doing like this weird, he's like a cardboard cutout, like off of like a fantasy romance novel character, which can work, but they're almost trying to play it straight too often for it to really be effective and be kind of funny, which I think is what they're going for. But regardless, this movie, the big problem I think is the two leads just don't really have that much chemistry. I didn't think they really did at all. Halle Bailey, this just isn't, I've seen her in The Little Mermaid, and I've heard her sing. I feel like her strengths are definitely in her voice, and she gets to use it for about 10 seconds in this movie. She's really not set up to succeed. This isn't great, but I will say it's like seeing wildlife come back to Chernobyl. Like, this is part of a healthy movie ecosystem. Having a on-location shot rom-com in theaters this part of the year for people to go see, but I wish it was better. I'm landing at a 35.
He just seemed much older to her than her to me. Like, he just seems like an adult.
She seems very young still.
Very young. I'm sure they're probably, I don't know how close, I have zero idea. But watching it, I'm just like, this guy seems like he's like 15 years older than. Maybe I'm bringing like black bag like history with me, but I'm like, this guy just seems way older. I don't know.
I'm not like a Bridgerton person, so I know that.
Oh, right. Yeah. Kind of,
that's what he is like. But everything I've seen him in, like, he just feels very robotic to me. Like, there's just something very, I don't know, it's like not natural.
Oh, you like him in Black Bag?
But that work, I feel like that works in Black Bag,
right,
though.
Okay.
Black Bag is so like quiet and like calm and like focused that it kind of works for that. Where like something like this, he's got to be a little looser and like.
See, I feel like he could be James Bond, like, honestly.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
You know,
yep. Yeah, that's why he works like a spy thriller. But this,
yeah.
I mean, I'll say this. So this is kind of my big thing about this movie. I'd rather 50 of these before the next Colleen Hoover movie.
Yeah.
Give me this over the next Colleen Hoover movie every day of the week. Cause those are painful to get through. That reminds me.
Is that much better than the last one? This stupid one with the
fucking kid.
Those movies are at least sometimes awkwardly different than this. Is just the same. Just,
that's a funny way of saying horribly written, but yeah. I see what you're saying.
There is a stupid trash element to the Colleen Hoover movies where, like, there's some entertainment value there. With this, I wasn't entertained at all.
This felt like a straight to Peacock release. I don't know. Like, it's a TV director, too, so.
Yeah, and I thought the other one was better, the Jennifer Lopez.
Me too.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was definitely a better movie. But yeah, this is still not good. 37 out of 100. Incredibly cliche and not, which is kind of weird because it's like, it's like a very like American rom-com feel. Fish out of water in a different country, and it looks nice, but like I feel like they never really like take full advantage of it. You can definitely tell in the pitch meeting, they were like, hey, hold on a second. Wouldn't this be fucking crazy if she was in Italy instead? And they're like, yes, absolutely. Like, you can just tell they thought they had something really big here that they could just cook with. And yeah, it just never worked for me. It just never worked.
Do you agree the Solo Mio might have hurt this a little bit? Like, not like tremendously, but the fact that one that's so similar came out so recently and was very good and surprisingly good. Maybe,
almost
but
different,
like,
audiences, weirdly. I don't know.
How much did Solo Mio end up making?
Probably not a ton, I'd imagine.
I thought it did. I say in the 20s? When
make like 25, 30 million domestic, maybe?
I think
maybe?
So.
Wonder how much it cost to make. Angel Studios.
I will say, I think this movie does drastically overperform at the box office, because I didn't clock it, but this is very much a movie for black audiences. Like, it, my audience was filled, which
oh,
I guess
sure.
That's pretty awesome that they get like the black audiences never get the European vacation movie. So it was,
that's, yeah,
it was nice
clamoring for. Yeah.
Are we there yet? Zurich, like that. That.
That's actually, I kind of like that, Ken Jack.
I'd watch that tomorrow. I'd be there.
Yeah, this I more rom-coms for sure, but let's get a little more going here. Like, let's kick the tires on something a little more interesting. That'd be kind of my big takeaway. So yeah, that's
feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One sweet tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
Director Jonah Hill, who's done other movies as well. Mid-90s is the one that comes to mind. Came out about 8 years ago, which is kind of crazy that he's back in the director chair 8 years later. He did do something else, I believe, but it might have been a documentary. But that was the notable one. That one came out from A24. I think, did everyone here enjoy mid-90s?
Yeah.
We interviewed the kids from that, remember, at A24's office?
Yeah, we did. We interviewed that. Yeah, it was a pretty solid movie from 2018. This movie, though, Outcome, it's on Apple TV, so no box office. Streaming on Apple TV right now if you want to watch it. Reef Hawk, played by Keanu Reeves, Hollywood's poster child since age 6, is not okay. When he learns about an extortion plot tied to a mysterious video, Reef preemptively sets out on a redemption tour to make amends, confront his demons, and avoid getting canceled. Keanu Reeves, Jonah Hill is in it as his manager, like an old guy or something, I think. I think, is he old?
Or something.
Or something.
How old do you think that character is? The character is either 70 or 30.
I was thinking 55.
Cameron Diaz, Matt Bomer, Susan Lucci, Laverne Cox, David Spade. Martin Scorsese has two interesting scenes. I know Kirk and I have talked about this. Is that like a text, like, hey, I was good in Wolf of Wall Street? What do you think?
Yeah,
like,
can you,
one for you, one for me, Marty? Like, starring my movie. Drew Barrymore, of course, Van Jones from CNN fame. Finally, we got him on the big screen. Been begging for it. hour and 24 minutes long, 26-31 split Rotten Tomatoes, 4.7. IMDb, Metacritic 37, 2.2 Letterboxed. Kirk, before you go, Abby, go first. Yeah. We have to note what this is. This is a commentary on cancel culture. Back in 2023, there was a whole thing about Jonah Hill. He was accused of being emotionally abusive and a misogynist narcissist by his ex-girlfriend. So that was the whole thing. That then something else surfaced as well. That he forced himself onto someone and kissed them at a party, Alexis Nicholas, who was a former Nickelodeon actress. That I don't know if anything ever came of that. I know that him and his team denied it. So this is some sort of commentary on that, and clearly pretty personal. With that said, is it a good movie, Kirk? What'd you give it?
That, I couldn't figure it out. That's why he had the pictures of Kevin Spacey and Kanye West in his office. That is a commentary. Oh, I got lost in the subtlety of the... I didn't even know... Is that what the movie was about? Really? Jesus. Wow. I mean, what's funny, you talk about Solo Mio, and then this movie. And this movie follows Jay Kelly,
yep.
You know, a few months later. And normally, I'm going to go for the more cynical movie any day of the week when you do it. But, like, this is just... you know, I could give credit to is Gooch, who I think had picked Jonah Hill in the disappointing careers draft a few weeks ago. I think he has to move up now. I don't even know what the fuck is going on here. You know, I will say, I'll start with some thumbs up. I think Scorsese, as always, is like good in his scenes. His second season is very good. And Lois, the babysitter from Goodfellas, plays the ex-girlfriend of his, of Keanu. And I think she's good in that, in when she's in the movie, in that scene. Mm-hmm. But like, it's awful. It's terrible. I like Keanu Reeves. I'm not sure what he's doing. He spent the last year of his career working with, you know, Aziz Ansari and Jonah Hill in these terrible movies. He's really miscast. I don't know why Jonah Hill decided to cast himself in this role. It's so distracting. You have like a decent scene, then you go back to him. He's freaking terrible in it. And like, I'm all for like an acidic, like angry, you know, movie, but this just misses every single time. Like in a lot of ways, it's the worst movie of the year so far because it has ambition and it tries to say something and fails. I'm trying to think what the worst movie is so far this year. I don't even know. What's the worst movie so far this year? It's like a No Doubt stinker, like a all-time Silent terrible Hill. One. I don't know.
Yeah. Return to Silent Hill.
What's that?
Return to Silent Hill. Though in terms of what we've talked about, this is like, Chapter 3 is up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but for something that's trying to do something and trying to make some sort of commentary, this is as bad as it gets. And this is the kind of thing where like Jonah Hill, to me, like 8 years from now, could be like living like naked somewhere. Just in like some like it like almost like as part of like a bit, like I don't know what the fuck is. I don't know where we lost him, but I think I fear he's gone and he's not coming back. I'll give this there's a couple of nice scenes. I'll give it a 16.
Oh
wow. Yeah,
I was just terrible. I hope somebody likes it.
No, I'm not far off. 21 out of 100 for me. This is, in terms of movies with like relevant people, one of the worst things of the year. The worst movie of the year in terms of movies with like well-known established people. This is so fucking pretentious and so obnoxious. It also has one of the biggest stop the movie dead in the track scene that I've seen in a long time. There's a scene here. This is not really giving anything away if you're not trying to have it spoiled. He's in a parking garage, just for those who are on here listening. Jonah Hill's character talks to like his son. It's like a 10-minute scene. It feels like a 10-minute scene. And it's just, just drones on. You're like, what the fuck is the point of this? And that's, again, after the lack of subtlety in this movie. I mean, just jamming it down your throat. And like, I'm sure there's an interesting movie here as like a personal reply to being canceled, but our interesting concept here, but it's not with this movie. It is Keanu Reeves is miscast. He just doesn't feel right for this role at all. It's the also like the stakes never feel high enough for me to care. Like it's they kind of make like a mockery of it, but almost in a way that makes you feel like this is what all like cancel culture attempts were, which like some were definitely bullshit. Some were definitely incredibly serious too. It's weird. It's a very strange movie, not enjoyable. The tone just ebbs and flows in a negative way. This was a stinker. Apple TV's got to stick to the big budget. Just give me F1s over and over again. Don't give me this. This sucked. This was really bad.
I was wondering how much money they said. I know Apple, it doesn't matter, but this is like a $50 million movie? Is this a third? Is it like, good what question. Is it? Like, what did they give Joan? What check did they give Joan the Hill to make this movie?
It felt like a big favor. What's the return movie on that? To me? It felt like a big, like,
yeah,
come do this thing with me. You won't be on set too long, like, type of movie. I don't know.
Yeah, like Drew Barrymore, Cameron Diaz, and Scorsese.
Ken Jack, what'd you give it? Yeah, I'm at a 20. To Kirk's point, it's like, what if Jay Kelly sucked even worse, is what I felt like coming out of it. I think, like, obviously, it's an introspective movie, and what I think would be more fascinating, the movie that would be good here, is the movie about Jonah Hill making this movie, because it seems to me that Jonah Hill doesn't have a clear perspective on how Hollywood is perceived, and watching this, like, surrealist, like, Harmony Korine rip, like, vanity project makes me think, like, you need to look inward, Jonah. Like, this, you're trying to be, like, I'm the self-aware guy. Like, you're not being self-aware right now. Like, what? This is all you not being self-aware. And, like, there are a few funny lines, for sure, but all I really felt watching it was wasted potential, because the concept of a fall from grace for a movie star, like, it definitely has legs. And you have two former top of the world names in my head, anyway, in Keanu and Cameron Diaz. Like, these are two people who were at their zenith. Like, they're like right at the top, and you could do something there. You can get it. But if you can't get good work out of either of them at all, they're both of them, I don't think we're good at really at all. And the best performance you get out of the movie is like a 5-minute monologue from Scorsese, which was very good. I think, I think your movie's a failure. And I think, yeah,
when Susan Lucci is better than like Cameron Diaz and Keanu Reeves, nothing in Susan Lucci. That's an issue, I think.
It's a big problem, a huge problem. And I think my big takeaway from this is I'm at my limit of Keanu playing versions of himself or just playing straight himself. I think that's happened now like 10 times in movies, and that's got to be, we're done with that. Play new characters, Keanu. Do something new. John Wick, great. No more doing the good fortune. I'm the good guy everyone like. No more doing Keanu the movie. No more doing like none of that stuff. Just play new characters. I'm done with that. So yeah, 20 out of 100 for me.
Talk about a not memorable movie, Good Fortune, the movie where he's an angel. Holy shit.
Yeah, I'm done with that.
I was going to, before movie that whoever's next, because I thought of this, I think I said this to you, like, Jeff and Clemmer, like, when I grew up, Keanu was a goofball. Like, he starred out Bill and Ted and Parenthood.
Yeah, Parenthood.
And, you know, you're kind of, and then when Speed comes out, you're like, whoa, Jesus, he's an action star. And like, it was like, boy, can we forget him as the goofy guy? Now, he's become an action star for so long. When he plays somebody goofy, you're like, I don't believe that. He's done like the full 180. It's very odd. Mm-hmm. One of the unique careers of all time.
Very.
Almost like identityless, which is maybe not a bad thing all the time. Like, sometimes it's a good thing, but it does feel... I don't know.
He's just not a very good actor, which I think is very... I think becomes apparent when you force him to main in a movie like this.
Very limited.
Gooch, what'd you give it?
25 out of 100. This is, like Ken Jack said, it's not introspective. It's completely outwards and written from just an angry place. You can feel it. You can feel throughout the movie that it is written from an extremely just vindictive place. And it could be interesting if he had, like Ken Jack said, any distance from it. But it feels like, you know, like you're in a text argument, like he's in a text argument, like writing back like angrily at the world, like a 14-year-old child. Like, it's just so emotional in the worst ways. Like, it's like he's throwing a tantrum throughout this movie. It's so self-indulgent and carries about as much weight as the bumper sticker that they slow zoom off of. Like, it has no depth to it. This movie's been done, and it's been done better. And this just, get back. I don't know. Jonah Hill, you stepped away for 6 years. I was hoping you'd come back with like a new perspective, but it seems that you've only gone to a worse place. Like, you really need to get your head on straight, because you are one of the most talented. I mean, he really was one of the most talented guys coming out of the 2010s. He's completely lost it. Like, this is so far off base from where he was. So 25 out of 100, a huge, I wouldn't say disappointment, but a disappointing career at this point.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, again, like, you saw this kind of interesting turn with John Wick and stuff, but it's kind of gone, I don't want to say nowhere, but it's gone kind of aimlessly, right? Clemmer, you've seen a bunch of the really, really, really shitty movies like I have this year. How close does this get to the bottom for you?
Not that close. Maybe that's why I maybe appreciate it a bit more than you guys do. I give this a 46. Like, this is not good. There are good moments, though. And I didn't hate the Cameron Diaz, Matt Bomer stuff maybe as much as you guys did. I didn't mind that. But then this was such an exercise in self-destruction for so many reasons. First off, Gooch is right. This is written from an angry place. Secondly, every time the movie started to kind of find its footing, Jonah Hill would come on screen in one of the worst performances of the year.
I think we haven't really stated enough how terrible that character is.
Like, so terrible. Bad. There's literally a scene of him like taking a shit. It's just like out of nowhere. Like, it's just so distracting and weird and pointless. And it's like, Gooch made a good point. Like, how this guy's kind of lost his way. He doesn't even seem to know what's funny anymore, when this was one of the funniest guys going for a long time. But there are enough things here I did kind of appreciate. The scene with him and the ex-girlfriend, I thought was really good. I liked the scene with him and the two friends near the end of the movie. But like, compared to something like mid-90s, which is, I think, like a good, not great movie, but a good movie with some really interesting shots and characters you kind of cared about and a unique perspective, this didn't have that. So I think there are elements here that I could enjoy more just because it's not a Return to Silent Hill or Strangers Chapter 3 or even like Yumi in Tuscany. Like, I like this more than that because at least this took chances. But this is not a good movie. This is bad. I mean, you know, it's on the bad side of things. This is a 46.
He is quite remarkably terrible in this movie, Jonah Hill. Like,
crazy.
I don't know what he's going for, almost purposely.
I feel like he's almost trying to sabotage it. I don't. It's one of those, like, you know. Do you guys think at any point, because of his relationship, that he like offered that role, the counter role to DiCaprio, or no?
Like, I bet you yes.
Just give it a read.
It probably crossed his mind, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, why not? Why not? I mean, he's trying. Yeah.
Leo's absolutely.
Probably like, well, yeah, I don't, you know, I'm busy. I'd like to.
I wonder if he even thought about, because like the role that he plays could have potentially been done, I think, really well as, with about a character actor, right? Like an actual character actor. But I feel like he, like that was an appropriate age too for that guy. But I don't know. I wonder if he even thought about that. Like maybe cast somebody else in this role. It's just, it's so, such a bizarre, so many bizarre choices in this movie.
Yeah, very, very strange, unpleasant, annoying movie. It's probably the best way to put it.
Did you feel like it was like almost the Beach Bum when you were watching it at points? Do you remember that with McConaughey? Like it felt like Corinne, yeah. Like it felt a lot like that to me watching it.
That's Harmony,
very abrasive.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like sandpaper, visual sandpaper.
What a brutal. Shit week.
I mean, just a fucking brutal movie.
Fucking point.
Yeah, you know, I like to always say, go see it if it's in theaters. This isn't in theaters. It's on Apple. You can skip this one. unless you're looking for like a really bad take on cancel culture with Jonah Hill playing an incredibly annoying, weird role, I think you're good then. Other than that.
I mean, it's a great psychological analysis. I will say that. Like there is.
Yeah.
One of you guys said, like, you know, if you have Mike Figgis do a documentary like he did on Megalopolis, I'd be 1,000% be in to watch that.
That, I think, even if it was a documentary or if it was an actual movie about a character of Jonah Hill making this movie, not realizing what it's saying about him, I think could be,
You know, he walked on set, he saw that big Kevin Spacey and Roseanne picture, and he was like, yes, yes, now that's smart.
The
now
inner machinations smart right there. Of my mind, you guys just wouldn't get. I'm a sick puppy. Like, all right, Jonah.
Jonah Hill has another movie coming out this year, another movie he directed.
Oh,
so
yeah,
be on the lookout.
Was he trying to say Kanye like just didn't get canceled too? Kanye very much like fell out of the public eye for like 3 years, right?
Yeah,
he went full Hitler. Titus,
lost like
that's you don't. Yeah, you don't go back. Yeah, he's always back. So who the hell knows? I don't know.
He has a disabled child though, so he's a good guy.
That whole scene was so fucking weird. That was like
that's true.
I actually kind of froze up during that scene.
That was like a 3 or 4 minute scene in an 80-minute movie, right? Or am I wrong?
Yeah.
All right.
So the next movie, as you were saying, Clemmer, cut off two rich siblings who were cut off by their parents. It's him and Bette Midler.
And Kristen Wiig.
Nathan Lane. What a crew. Can't wait for that one. Maybe it'll be funny. Hey,
I think that one's going to be in theaters too. So
yeah, maybe that one will be funny.
Yeah. So, I mean, very low scores for outcome from Jonah Hill. It's on Apple TV Plus if you want to give it a try. But I'm going to warn you. On behalf of everyone here, don't expect much. Don't expect much. All right, news, trailers, what's going on in the world of cinema here. A couple new trailers, not a ton. We had the final trailers from the Michael Jackson movie, Michael, which I will note with a big caveat, it got very good early buzz and reviews. I would assume, like a lot of these, this is not unique to this movie, that the audience that went and saw that was incredibly well handpicked.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
there's a lot of if you follow film Twitter, if you follow movie reviewers, there's a pretty common theme of who was giving the reviews to the movies. We'll see though. I mean, I also would anyone be shocked though if this is good? I kind of wouldn't be.
I'd be shocked if it works.
I'd be stunned if it's good. Stunned. Well, what's good? Like, what's the movie?
I think the ceiling is Bohemian Rhapsody, right?
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Which is terrible.
That's the ceiling.
Yeah. Mm. Like, so.
Like, you know, passable.
So I don't like Bohemian Rhapsody either, but I would, a movie that's incredibly well liked by the general movie going public.
Yeah. Oh,
like
yeah.
Passable
yeah,
enough yeah, yeah. I think you don't hate your experience. Even though I did slowly like hate Bohemian Rhapsody over time.
Terrible. I would say this will be like a. Whatever, low, high audience score. The audience score will be over 90 for this, I think.
Yeah,
he looks terrible. Doesn't matter. Yeah, yeah.
I feel like if this plays out almost like you're going to a concert, like it's an entertainment event versus a movie, like that is also a win for them. I don't think if it needs to be like, you know, some high level music biopic.
Yeah, I saw a couple. I saw there was one review that I was like, oh, this is just gonna be Bohemian Rhapsody. Though apparently, I will say though, apparently from what I've read, we'll see if it's true or not. It does dive deeper into his, and it dove into some of Freddie Mercury's issues, though it did it with such a glossy sheen that it was like,
what are the issues?
Yeah, where they did say it's like they do dive deeply into like Michael's loneliness and like, you know, like his inner issues. I mean, so I don't know, maybe
they changed the ending,
some meat on the bone. Hmm.
They changed the ending. I don't know, like the family had total control over it, so you know,
yeah. So we'll see. If 3 out of 5 of us give it in the 70s, I think that's a massive victory. We'll see if that happens, though. Again, good reviews, but from people that I would say it gives me a little bit of pause. Devil Wears Prada 2 had a final trailer that comes out in a few weeks. I think that's going to be a big movie. Oh, yeah. They're marketing the shit out of it.
I think that's going to make a lot of money.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Other trailers. One for The Invite. This is from A24. A married couple experiencing a rough patch in their relationship finds themselves invited by their neighbors to engage in their weekly orgies. This feels like it's just a spin. It's like just like the next in line after the drama, just like the drama, The Invite. It's like relationships and people. From A24, directed by Olivia Wilde. I don't think she's done anything since that last one that was the bizarre fucking movie that nobody really liked.
Don't Worry, Darling. Is that it?
Didn't somebody spit on somebody at the premiere of that? Wasn't that the big thing?
Yeah.
He spit on Chris Styles.
Yeah. He spit on Chris Pine.
Yeah. Harry Styles spit on Chris Pine. How could I forget that?
Or did Chris Pine spit on?
No, Styles spit on Pine. I remember Pine is like mid-clap and he's like looks down at
Yes,
that was 4 years ago. She also did direct.
That was 4 years ago.
Yeah, she directed Booksmart in 2019, which was great.
Yeah,
did well. People really like Booksmart, but then she did Don't Worry, Darling. So there's a lot of hype on that, and it didn't really hit. So now she has The Invite. What do people think about the trailer on this one? Any hope for Seth Rogen, Olivia Wilde, Penelope Cruz, Edward Norton? Any hope on this one?
Love the cast.
Great cast. Right.
I'm intrigued.
Sure. Yeah.
Great Rogan's cast. Been pretty good in the studio as well, which gives me a little bit of like he's been. I know he's playing like a fictionalized version of like himself as like a studio head, but he's been pretty good in that. So like that kind of gives me some like, oh, you know what, this could be a good role. This could kind of work out here.
Yeah. I mean, Olivia Wilde and Penelope Cruz having an orgy on screen. I'm there opening weekend. But come on.
You're excited for that? Yeah.
I also think like I'm gonna ignore Don't Worry, Darling, because I did like Booksmart enough. Don't Worry, Darling felt like almost overly ambitious and just like too much.
Remember when Harry Styles was just a gamer in that movie? The big reveal that was that he was a gamer.
He was a gamer, and then he did that stupid fucking dance on stage, which I'll never forget for the rest of my life.
Dance,
and people
try
to tell me that. People try to tell me that movie was good. Rashida Jones wrote this, by the way, The Invite.
Which is really?
Interesting. I didn't know she wrote it.
Yeah.
Did not know that. That's interesting.
They skip the two, and Edward Norton and Seth Rogen just fuck the shit out of each other. Like,
no, I'm excited.
Bareback.
Let's go.
They just go for it. Just an enormous sex scene with those two. That'd be bold.
Not an original thought, but there have been a lot of Invite movies lately. Like I saw someone tweet that, and I think that is true. There's been a lot of like, well, this Invite isn't what it seems. What's going to happen here? That I feel like that has been a major theme in a lot of movies lately. But yeah, I'm there to watch Seth Rogen get fucking bust down by Ed Norton. I'll have to be there.
Oh, you think he'd be the bottom?
I think Ed Norton is a top in that situation.
Power top. Yeah. Power top. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That comes out in June, late June, though it did, I believe, premiere at Sundance to some pretty decent reviews, though, again.
Yeah, good reviews, yeah.
Yeah, we'll see if that translates once it comes out in kind of larger audiences. There's also a trailer, Mutiny, a new Jason Statham movie, just another fucking run-of-the-mill Statham.
You've seen this one.
You saw this movie.
I think we all have multiple times over the last few years.
Okay. Now I get what you're saying. Cole Reed was in the Special Forces and served as a New York police officer in a former life. Now working private security, Reed is framed for murdering his Thai billionaire friend, and he comes across an international conspiracy in his search for the true killer. Wow. The range on Statham is unbelievable.
Dude, usually we only get one of these a year. I don't love that we're getting two. I don't know if I need two.
Yeah, we are. I do. That is a good observation, Clever. I do feel like we're getting more. I feel like he's doubled his production in terms of like these types of movies.
Mm. I love the name, by the way. That's like, that is such a Jason Statham action movie name. Cole Reed, perfect. You can't get
these remain too serious though. That's like, I wish he would lean more into like the geezer teaser territory where it's like, it's kind of terrible. Like that I would, but these are so serious and so intense. You're like, oh my God.
It's like the same thing in every one. There's always a child trafficker he's got to bust up and some multinational cartel of something he needs to destroy. Like, it's, we could find one new topic, I think. One new guy for him to beat up.
Some news, Extraction 3. I know Ken Jack, biggest Extraction fan in the world, got quote tweeted by Chris Hemsworth. That's how big of a fan Ken Jack is of Extraction. Extraction 3 got greenlit.
Very excited. I love both Extractions. I think I was the second non-production person in the world to see Extraction 2, which is something they told me as I was leaving the screening room. They're like, yeah, you're like the second person to see it, I think. And I was like, I'm honored. You have no idea what this means to me. But I love them both. I'm very excited for a third. Very great dumb guy movies, which I appreciate. What was it? Rake Lives? What'd they say when they greenlit the
Rake
second
lives.
One? Rake Lives. Yeah. And everyone's fell like, who the water. Fuck is Rake?
Lived. Man, the last one was good, but it was like 2.5 hours long. I need the next one to be under two. We don't need the Extraction movies to be 3 hours long. I'll just say that.
First one knew exactly what it needed to be. First one was awesome. It was an awesome surprise. Just a big surprise. You're like, oh, fuck.
When he beat up those 12-year-olds in the alley, that was one of the best things I saw all year. That was great.
He just like open hand slapped one, and he did like a cartwheel. It was amazing.
And then here's some other news. Steven Soderbergh has teased that there will be AI in his upcoming movie. Heavy use of AI. So then he said it's worth talking about, and that technology might be what that technology might be good at. I've been working with AI lately on the John Lennon, Yoko Ono documentary that we're almost done with. AI has been helpful in creating thematically surreal images that occupy a dream space rather than a literal space. And that's been really fun because you need a PhD in literature to tell it what to do. But like every other piece of technology, it desperately requires very close human supervision. He also said, you show me a new tool. I want to get my hands on it and see what's going on. Now that is, whether you agree with this or not, that is true, right, Kirk? Like, he does. Soderbergh will fucking film a movie on an iPhone before anyone thought about doing that.
All the way,
he's done crazy things. I don't know if I stand on this as like a negatively as some because of what he's doing it with, like what he's using it for. Like, I get using it for, like, again, like making a realistic space within like some, you know, dream or like literal space in like a documentary. This is not him, like, you know, it's not him making Black Bag and like Michael Fassbender's like AI on screen.
Right. Hmm. At least he's out, he's saying it. You know, these documentaries come out and they use it. They don't say it. I mean, it's not perfect. I know people are all worked up about it, but this is 2026. I mean, I get his point. It was another Soderbergh story this week, too. He pitched another, I forget what it was. It wasn't Star Wars, but it was another franchise.
He just pitches things left and right that Bond? People aren't green. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Was it Bond or no? Am I wrong? I forget. And they were like, nope. No,
it was Bond. It was like a really low budget Bond, right?
Yeah. Okay. Poor guy. Jesus. So, yeah. But yeah.
Why is he getting Soderbergh turned away at every door these days? What's going on?
Yeah. Fucking crazy.
He is, by the way, not going to do that fucking Star Wars movie. He is like, I'm not doing that shit. You said no, it's over. I've moved on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's too bad.
The one thing that not like bends me out about it is it's like, when you hear like Soderbergh using AI, like, at first, if it was another director, if it was like, you know, Sean Levy's like, I'm making a whole AI movie, I'd be like, I don't want to do that.
Right.
With Soderbergh, like you're saying, like experimental, he's going to do something weird. Like maybe it could be almost something like in the Conor O'Malley bullshit he does. Like he uses AI in like a satirical way. Maybe it could be something like that. But then he's like, yeah, I need it for my Yoko Ono documentary. It's like, I don't know if you need AI, generative AI for a Yoko Ono documentary, but I'll reserve judgment at least until we see it.
And then before we talk about things that we have been watching lately. I just saw a picture from Fandango. CinemaCon is this week, so we'll definitely have stuff on CinemaCon next week. I think we're going to probably get our first trailer for Digger with Tom Cruise.
Very excited.
They've been promoting it at Coachella this past weekend, so that seems to be imminent. There's the Angel Studios is at CinemaCon, and they have their next three movies. And there's one that, I mean, unbelievable. So they have an anime movie called Animal Farm, directed by Andy Serkis, coming out.
Seth, did you see the cast on that? Like, it's like stacked. Like, every star in the world is an Animal Farm.
Yeah, from Seth Rogen to Steve Buscemi to Glenn Close. Yeah, Kieran Culkin, Woody Harrelson. Their animated stuff has been hit or miss, but they've had one or two like decent things. Then there's what we call Zero AD, which I assume is a heavy, heavy Bible related movie. And then there is a movie coming out from Angel Studios. Looks unbelievable. Young Washington.
Yes.
The young George Washington. It's
wait a minute. Why? I did not hear about this.
You're trying to tie
Young Washington. Again, Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis directed that?
No, I think he's in it.
He's playing Young Washington.
Okay. Kelsey Grammer, Andy Serkis, Ben Kingsley, and Mary Louise Parker.
Feed me. Hell yes.
They're trying to tie it
I am
to the 250th and birthday of the country. So it's all like, yes.
Young, a lot of young Washington.
We'll say kind of nuts that we've never gotten a straight up George Washington biopic. The dude's got stories on stories on stories. Just seems like the coolest guy to ever live.
I think Jeff Daniels played him in the TV miniseries. I could be wrong, but you're right. There's been no film adaptation.
They did a John Adams one, which is great. The John Adams one is great, by the way. They had HBO series.
Am I crazy?
Yeah, the Giamatti one, very good.
Very good.
Did Ted Danson play George Washington in Curb Your Enthusiasm in a movie? I might be making that subplot up, but that just sounds, just sounds
familiar. That may be right. That may be right.
A little disappointed, though. No Reagan 2. Was really hoping for Reagan 2.
I mean, here, Nancy Reagan's one is on next videos.
It's true. Reagan, we'll be talking about Reagan in a few weeks when we finish up our top 50. What have we been watching? Kirk, anything else? I know you've also finished Memory of a Killer, the worst drama in the history of network television. Which ticket picked up for season two?
Shark Tank is limping right now. I tried. I'm not a Bill Lawrence guy, but I've tried this Rooster show with Steve Carell. Just so far, kind of. People say it gets better. Connie Britton comes in, I guess, but I'm two episodes or an episode and a half in. It's very sitcom-y and tonally strange and it's another Steve Carell attempt to run away from Michael Scott, which I like. He keeps trying, but it's so far not working for me.
Is there a case to be made that he should have been on our list for the disappointing careers?
Yeah.
Anchorman, Big Short, like Foxcatcher, Foxcatcher, you got an Oscar nom for it.
I do think it's different when you come from comedy versus coming from drama. Like, if you come from comedy, I don't know how high I expect the ceiling to be. So maybe that's a little bit different expectation. So
that's fair.
It's a dumb comparison because when Bruce Springsteen did Born in the USA, he then did Tunnel of Love, broke up the East Street. I tried to get as far away from them as possible. Carell, even start with The Way, Way Back and Foxcatcher and The Morning Show and all this stuff has tried so four seasons, tried so hard to be like an ass. But then you see him, you're like, oh, you just like the guy. He's like Michael Scott.
It's true. He is.
You can't get away from it.
But this is a funny problem to have. He is just like inherently too likable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could just run with the Morning Show. Vice and he's Donald Rumsfeld in Vice, right? Am I?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like it's Steve Carell. Like it's
found different ways to be likable. Like 40-year-old virgin, he's likable. He's not Michael Scott. Like find different ways to be likable, but not be Michael Scott.
That's before Michael. That's before The Office, though. Kind of. That's the problem.
Right.
Or coincided a little.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could have like a.
It's hard. It's like.
Yeah. Do you remember Albert Brooks when he was in Drive? Like just randomly was like a great villain. Like I think you could randomly, if you're like a likable, lovable comedian guy, you could just throw one out there. Maybe you could just have it.
I've been trying the For All Mankind show, which has been out for years, but it's been around for so long. I'm like, look, this is clearly something here. It kind of drags for me. We interviewed Joel Kinnaman when that show, I think for the second season of that show.
Yeah.
some of it's intriguing. I like alternate history stuff, but some of it is just kind of a fucking slog. But we'll see. It's been going on for years. I'm only through season two, but it does have some of the funniest alternate history headlines. Where it'll be like, there's two that they crack me up. It's like Ted Kennedy was upset that the Russians got to the moon first. So upset he left a party at Chappaquiddick early. It's like, okay, all right. And then there's a recent one. There's another episode. They're like, the bullets missed John Lennon. He says the world needs to come together. Oh, it's like, yes, yes.
Oh my God.
Give me that. More of that.
If only that could have made the documentary.
Another show that's kind of right up there with Rooster is the DTF St. Louis show, which I don't love. I thought the first couple episodes were solid, and then I don't know, it kind of veered off into a different direction. Not completely, but just like the way it was like unfolding, its mystery I didn't love. So that kind of, I'll finish it, but whatever. I've enjoyed Daredevil so far. I know there's a lot of like haters on this because it's like not the Netflix series, but I thought this current season is fucking great so far. Good action, good storyline developing. I've really enjoyed the new Daredevil. Maul Shadow Lord, give me every bit of Star Wars animated shit that you can give me. I'll take it all. And then two movies I saw: Pizza Movie with Gaten Matarazzo from Stranger Things.
I watched that last
enjoyable
night.
Enough Hulu
it's
movie.
Fun.
Yeah, and then a bad movie. I know Clemmer saw it too. Forbidden Fruits with Lily Reinhart. You have Lola Tung from Summer I Turned Pretty. Victoria Pedretti's. It's a weird, not good movie.
It's like makes fun of mall culture in a movie that came out in 2022. It's strange.
Yeah, kind of weird. Anyone else get watch anything?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the original 1990, I believe. It's talked about in Super Critics with Robbie. So if you like that movie or don't like the movie, check it out. We review that movie, which we both enjoy.
Yeah, I'm with you on those shows that you talked about, Jeff. Mall Shadow Lords, loved it. Daredevil's been amazing. The Pit, still great. Still a great show. Fandom, insane. One of the worst fandoms I've ever encountered in my entire life. And then Invincible has been really good. I'm a couple episodes ahead now, and obviously everyone's going crazy over episode 5. Really good. I think 6 is like on par. Really, really amazing as well. And then The Boys is in such a weird spot, right? Where it's like as time has gone on, it's been very tough to sort of parody things as things get crazier. I did like these first two episodes so far, with the exception of how they've handled the transition of the character of Kimiko, I guess. But other than that, so enjoyable.
Nice. Pizza Movie, by the way. I had a good time with that. It's not like a great movie or even, I would say, like, very good. But it's the kind of comedy that kind of signals that we are kind of getting back to the way things were. Like, that kind of, like, stoner college comedy, sex comedy. Like, we haven't gotten a lot of those in, I think, forever. So it was nice seeing that, as stupid as it was. Also picked up some movies. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, 4K.
Nice.
Nice.
Upgrade. And I also upgraded Dark Knight Trilogy. Had to do it.
Hell yeah.
Going to try and get all the Nolans up to 4K before The Odyssey comes out.
Yeah, I went on a tear buying stuff. Too much shit to show off in one. But I dove into different labels of distributors for movies. So I'll highlight one today that I went into. Second Sight makes incredible packaging in movies. So I got the Florida Project.
Ooh.
Just in the way they package it, you have booklets, you have all these behind the scenes stuff. Fantastic in 4K. I also got Tangerine from Sean Baker as well. I got Red Rocket, but another nice set here. Pearl. The sequel to X, which they don't have. I didn't get Maxine. Didn't love Maxine, but looks fantastic. Pearl in 4K. Also, you have Dawn of the Dead.
Banger.
It's a lot of older movies, cult classic stuff, smaller movies from some big directors. You got Pusher Trilogy as well. Got this. This is a fucking awesome box set. Three great movies here. Reanimator. This is another great one.
That's really good.
They have a lot of cool stuff. They also have like In Bruges. That I want to get my hands on, Babadook, and then The Nice Guys, also from
great
Second
movie.
Sight. So Second Sight has now become maybe my favorite non-Criterion. They have some fucking awesome releases, look great on the shelf. So yeah, I bought a couple other ones like Radiance and stuff, but we'll show those off next
Did
week.
You
but
get
great special features, booklets, like parts of the script. I mean, you get,
fuck yeah. Did you get The Man from U.N.C.L.E. though, Jeff? You didn't get the true banger out of all these.
The Man from U.N.C.L.E., The Woman from U.N.C.L.E., boom.
God,
God. Yes, I did, brother. I did get the mad uncle.
Oh, there we go.
God damn it.
So picked up some good stuff. The mailbox in the UK is going great for me. Shout out to those people. The mailbox in the UK, which, by the way, customer service is in Bradenton, Florida, I found out. so that is kind of our look at what we've been watching, some physical media. Let's get into our top 50 list. So the top 50 movies of the century so far, 2000 through 2025. Last week in our rankings, I will tell you what we had. 50 through 41, Interstellar 50, Wind River 49, Road to Perdition 48, The Big Short 47, Boyhood 46, Memories of Murder 45, Before Sunset 44, Memento 43, Sideways 42, Sicario 41. So reminder how we do this. We all ranked our top 75 movies. We had a point total system. You get bonus points if you show up on two lists, three lists, four lists, five lists, so on and so forth. You get bonuses if you finish in the top 50. You get bonus points if you finish in the top 10. And you get extra bonus points if you finish ranked fifth, fourth, third, second, and then first for people. So we wanted to reward movies that people loved the most. So that's how we came up with this list. We are now going to go through 40 through 31. And we're going to start out with somebody's fifth ranked movie at number 40. It was on my list, Kirk's list, and Clemmer's list. That is 2007, Tony Gilroy's Michael Clayton comes in at number 40. Kirk, take it away. Number five for you on your list.
I don't shame. It's a disgrace that it's on everybody's list. I mean, this is a masterpiece. There is not a false moment in this movie. You talk about a cast. You got Clooney. You got Wilkinson. You have an Oscar winner. You have Sidney, the great, great, great Sidney Pollack. You have Michael O'Keefe. I mean, this is a true old-fashioned, they don't make them like this anymore, offered to Denzel originally, by the way, who would have been incredible in this movie. I mean, just one of the great payoff endings of all time, too. I mean, my favorite post-credit scene of any movie ever. Like, the scene him in the cab is my favorite. It's Clooney. When we talked about Clooney a few weeks ago, when I walked out of Clayton in 07, you know, one of the great years in movie history, Michael Clayton's, like, you know, my third favorite movie that year, and I have a fifth. I thought, wow, I mean, this is finally Clooney finally did it. They don't, you know, this is just great, fantastic. Closer to one than 10 for me, but I mean, I love it. Love it, love it, love it. I wish Tony Gilroy made another movie like this, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, this is just fantastic stuff. And I mean, it is, I will say, his biggest thing since then, and I guess what is fucking Andor, Tony Gilroy.
That's true, which has hints of it, like in a weird way. Like you can see the guy who did this did that. Mm-hmm. Like definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
If you're someone who maybe has
Clive
seen
Owen and Roberts, which, yeah.
Yeah, if you maybe not seen Michael Clayton, you've seen Andor, watch Michael Clayton because you'll feel it. Just a fucking dynamite cast here too. Wilkinson, great. Swinton, Sidney Pop. I mean, just a fucking awesome cast. This is, again, this
Ken
is one
Howard,
of those ones where it's
everyone's
like,
everyone's great in it.
I hate dumping on Clooney for like The Midnight Sky, that shit movie came out on Netflix, and talking about how it's like, man, he's been in some things that just stink because this is there. And you're like, this is awesome.
Such a smart movie. So like, so intelligent, never talks down to the audience. And you're just along for this ride. It's exciting. It's brilliant the entire time. I really love this movie.
Yeah, it's a good one. I'm glad it showed up on our list. Number 40, 60th for me. Kirk 5, Clemmer 46. So that's number 40, top 50 movies of the century so far. Michael Clayton. Number 39, another top 5 movie for Kirk. This is 31 for me. Only two people that have this on the list. We are two of the biggest fans of this movie that I think exist, and that is Jordan Peele's Nope, 2022.
Wow, nobody else has on the list? Wow. No,
that's a miss. That was actually a fuck-up on my part.
Oh, okay.
Probably should have.
Where would you have it?
I would have it probably in the 50 to 70 range.
Okay, it wouldn't have moved it up or down. It wouldn't have moved it up much more, so that's not it. Yeah. So you can definitely chime in for sure, but
I yapped on Michael Clayton, so go ahead.
No. I mean, you have it at number four, which, I mean, I fucking love this movie. I think this is going to age really well. I think the longer we go from this movie coming out, the more people that kind of watch it. Like, I think the next time he releases a movie, this movie's going to pop up again. It just says it's such a deep, well thought out movie that has so much to fucking say. And it just looks incredible. Well acted. His kind of like, his version of like kind of like a Jaws type thing too, like big blockbuster, like Spielberg movie. It just, Nope is fucking incredible. And it came out at a weird time with movies too, right? We're still kind of coming up off of COVID and shit, where I don't know if it'd come out maybe in like a different range of years. I think this maybe gets a little more praise than it did, but I just fucking, I love Nope. I think it's a little fantastic more. Movie.
It got Nope. Well, it got critical praise, but I mean, it didn't get nominated for anything, which okay. I think is yeah. one of the worst snubs, like in terms of a movie getting zero, because at least cinematography, one of the best looking, like even if the plot doesn't fully work for you, the performances don't, man, does that look good. Man, does it look good.
Is this the only movie on the list where the B story is better than the main story? Or
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I totally get that. People think that. The B story is unbelievable. The lead performance to me is great. It's a movie I think about the most from this century, for sure. To me, it's, I know another movie of his is going to be much, much higher. I understand that, but I like this movie more. And I think it's going to, as time goes on, you know, like I get Nolan, I get Denis, but I think this is the true genius of this century is Jordan Peele. Like, I think the next 20, 25 years are going to be unbelievable. I think he's the Spielberg. I think he's the guy. And it makes different movies, but you know, everything he does, his career is so varied and so interesting. Like I walked out of that movie stunned. I didn't know what to expect going in, but it is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I'm with you on Spielberg, which I think people might find that hyperbolic. I don't think it's hyperbolic at all. Like he's like, he gets that level of blockbuster filmmaking. And like when he sets it, he just hasn't really set his mind to the same sort of project that Spielberg might've been at this point. Like he's doing more horror stuff, obviously. But I think if he set his mind to a project like a Jurassic Park or something like that, which had more wide ranging appeal, I guess, like it would crush. It would absolutely crush. Not that his movies aren't already crushing, but it would be like that next level for sure.
What does he have next?
Good question.
I don't know, but he needs to stop attaching his name to dog shit movies.
Yes.
His Monkey Paw production.
That was tough. That was tough last year. That was a tough scene. What was the concussion? Him. What the hell was
him?
That?
Him.
Yeah, which...
He's had a few of them where it's like, yeah. They really flash his name in those trailers. And I'm like, they got to stop doing that to him. Stop.
To the point where I thought he directed him when they were first teasing him.
I did too. For the first like week that trailer came out. I was like, holy shit, he did a football movie? Like, no, he didn't. there's a lot of movies about like grief and trauma lately. And I don't think any of them even hold a candle to what Nope did. Obviously, this came out at a pretty relevant time for me. I just lost my dad, so there was like a grief trauma angle to this that I just felt like a huge connection to. It also talks a lot about race, the entertainment industry, animal cruelty, the idea of like the spectacle, right? And how we get so lost in the spectacle as a people and how terrible that can be. It just this movie, the more layers you peel back on the movie Nope, it's so fucking deep. I implore anyone who only saw this once, give it a try again.
Okay.
Like try it again, watch it. There's so much to this. And again, it's not just like a message movie. Like it just looks fucking fantastic too. Just big.
There's no volleyball big movie. In it, but yeah, it's good.
Awesome stuff.
The guy that played the cinematographer, I think, was a pretty inspired. It's Wincott, the guy from the bad guy from The Crow. Bad way to phrase him, but the guy that played the cinematographer, I think that was a really inspired casting too. Just to add on to it, I thought he was really good.
Nope.
I do love Nope. So definitely. Also, the Scorpion King hoodie is one of the greatest things in the movie. Just fantastic. He's wearing that thing. It's awesome. Great reference. So that is number 39 of our top 50 movies of the century so far. Nope from Jordan Peele. 38 is a surprise to me. I was actually stunned that this wasn't on all five lists. This is on my list. It's on Kirk's list. It's on Clemmer's list. I have it the highest. I have it at 24. I thought it was going to be higher on Clemmer's. I actually thought this would be a top 10 movie for you. That is Joachim Trier's 2021 movie, The Worst Person in the World with Renata Reinsva. Fantastic movie, and one that I actually was a little disappointed that it didn't get kind of propped up more in the mainstream with the success of Sentimental Value, their most recent collab. But Clamor, I'll let you, because I know I thought you'd have this top 10, 15-ish, because I know you love this movie as well.
Yeah, I do love this movie very much. It's fantastic. I love kind of the third act. I don't want to give it away if anyone hasn't seen it, but I kind of love how that third act kind of shifts to being more tragic. And it's interesting look on mortality and kind of like what we are, what is a life worth lived, and like what does it mean to die young. There's so many like interesting levels to this that I didn't expect when I sat down in the chair to watch this movie. And the first third kind of delivers on what you expect, and then it shifts, and then the act of performances are just through the roof, like incredible, to the point where like you're crying at the end of this. And it's a sensational movie, and I'm so excited to see like what he has next. The sentimental value delivered for me too.
Yeah, check out Oslo, August 31st. You haven't seen that either. Another movie that he's done that I've mentioned on here. That's also fantastic. But yeah, Kirk, I mean, he's a director that's definitely gotten his praise now. And I think she's going to eventually win Best Actress. Like, I think it's like it just feels like whatever she's in, she is fan. I mean, she was great last year in the movie with Sebastian Stan, Different Man.
She's good,
right,
yeah.
Different Man. Is that like a Chris Pratt action movie? It's Different Man, right?
Yeah, yeah. The okay. Yeah, and she's got a big. She's got something big coming up soon, right? What is it?
You're Fjords.
Yes, yeah.
Right. She's in.
Well, Fjord with Sebastian Stan, and that's going to be amazing. I'm sure.
Yeah, right. Okay, like some stands in as well. Yeah, people are saying she might win for that. So yeah, it's great. Clemmer's right. Like did not know what to expect going in and loved it. It was. Yeah, it's a good spot. I think I have it somewhere in the 40s, which is about right for me. I really liked it.
Yeah, you have 42. Clemmer has it 45 out of 24. Yeah.
One of the best drug use scenes of this century, too. The trip scene.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
There's just something of it's just a very grounded, humanizing, like raw role. Like, she really has this ability. And she did it with sentimental value, too, where it's like, I know she's acting, but it's like she's not. It's just so fucking natural to her in some of these roles. It's just she's fantastic. And he is such a good director. I was very glad he got a nomination this year. I think they're – oh, he also won technically too. He did win. He did win for Best International Feature. But do think she has Oscar gold in her sights eventually. 37 is a shocker. So 38, number 38 ranked movie on our top 50 movies of the century so far. The worst person in the world at 38. From 2021. 37 surprised me as well. Only on 3 out of 5 list. Did not expect this one. I thought this was going to land in the top 20. 12 for Kirk, 19 for me, 69 for Kendrick. That's 2017 Jordan Peele's Get Out. Lands at 37. Much lower than I thought it would.
Wow.
Not on the list from Clemmer, not on the list from Gooch.
Clemmer, you're not a fan of Jordan Peele.
I am. I like him a lot. I actually think of his three movies, I think I liked Us the most. They're all, for me, they all hit, like, very good. Like, I don't have, like, I don't think I have any of the three in, like, great. I like him a lot. I'm genuinely enjoyed looking forward to what he has next, but it's top 75 for me, not there for me.
Yeah.
It's
not as good as a Rupert. This is going to be the movie this
not
week.
Not as good as what
What'd you say?
What was that again? Not as good as what?
Sounds good as your number one. Well, it's not as good as your number one film.
Road to Perdition. It's nowhere near as good as Road to Perdition.
Right. Most beautiful film ever made.
If it was the top 150, all three movies would be there for me.
We know your issue with Jordan Peele, Clemmer. The
No.
What? That he was a sketch comedian. Now he's a filmmaker.
Right, so.
Improv guy that made it. Yeah, it's jealousy.
Yeah,
coming.
You know.
You
yeah,
see
yeah. Gooch last week
for
got
Key
a lot of
Peele. He didn't get it. That's why.
Right.
It's he met his wife. Right, and he was trying out for the Gooch got a lot of credit last week for saving us from not having Nolan on the list. I think this will be the movie this week where people are like, wow, because this is like, I think a lot of people have this number one this century. I think it's become such a cultural, like, sort of, you know, signal for this Get Out was such a change in filmmaking that I think this will be the one people are like, you guys are fucking idiots. And I have a 12, so it's not like I have a number one.
Yeah, I have it 19. I mean, it is... There's moments when you're watching someone make, obviously when you go see this movie, like, what do you expect? You're like, Jordan Peele's making a fucking horror movie. The sunken place, when he falls into the sunken place and he's just like, fall. That's one of those moments where you watch it, you're like, oh damn, this guy has it. Like this, oh, okay. Like this guy knows what he's doing. Like this is like, you, I don't know. I remember watching it thinking like, oh, this is like special. Like there's something about this. And I had it, and I knew Coogler was a good director as well, but there's those moments in some of these movies where it's like, you see that, you saw it, like the music scene from Ryan Coogler, right? You're like, oh, holy shit. Like he has something. Like this guy like really has, I mean, maybe it was the one shot in Creed, by the way, it could have been the one shot fight scene in Creed. But yeah, so similar to Jordan Peele, like when you saw the sunken place thing, you're just like, oh wow. Like I think I got that with like Denis too, like watching like even like Sicario, it's like, you're like, holy fuck. Like they just have something that's kind of different. And that's what I get with this, with Get Out. And I just think he's never let the foot off the pedal. I like Us. I agree with Clemmer, by the way. I'm also a fan of Us. I feel like some people thought that was maybe like a slight step down, but I think that movie's fantastic as well. That's not just my Tim Heidecker bias. So yeah, Get Out, easy top 20 for me. I don't know if you agree with this, Kirk and Kendrick, but it's always gotten better for me too when I've watched this movie.
Yeah, aged very well.
Definitely, definitely. When did it get released?
It's extremely tight.
Was it released in the winter? Sorry. No, I know, but what time? I'm sorry, what time of year? Was it like February or something?
It premiered, so it premiered Sundance in January, and then it hit
February 24th, United States.
Yeah. You know where I saw Clemmer? Yes. I was in spring training for EEI. I saw the movie theater there. And I was like, I had no idea what to expect. I was by myself.
Well, Myers.
No, it was solo. And I was like, to Jeff's point, I was like, holy shit. Which I think was sort of everyone's reaction to it. Yeah, unbelievable.
Jackie also, Bradley Jr. Fan. It's kind way of a fun Bradley Whitford role too. Just something a little different, Bradley Whitford.
Yeah, it's Allison really like, Williams.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think in this movie too, Nick like Keener, yeah. Around this period of horror movies, like I feel like everything is kind of stagnant. Like not a lot of innovation happening around like this. There's a lot of sequel slop garbage. Like we've been reviewing movies around this time, like shit, like the Bye Bye Man or whatever. Like this is like new, original, different. Like it just it did. Everything that you would want out of a horror movie. And it also put like people on the map in like Kaluuya. He like kind of propelled himself into stardom after that. And also, was it Brian Tyree Henry too? I think also.
Yeah.
Stanfield too.
Yeah. Lakeith Stanfield too. Great point. Yeah. There's just a lot of stuff that he does in this movie, which was so like innovative at the time, which I really appreciate and still do. And I would agree. I think it's only gotten better with time.
Yeah. The biggest thing to me for that movie is, and outside of the filmmaking, is it's just so tight. There's literally no fat on that movie at all. Like at all. It's fantastic.
How close is it to your list?
It would have been in that 75 to 100 range. That's just like horror definitely is not my like top genre. So when it comes time to really start to split some hairs, the horrors usually get knocked down.
Number 37 on our top 50 movies of the century so far, Get Out from Jordan Peele. 36. This is a top 10 movie for Kenjack, almost top 10 movie for Gooch. I have it at 70. Theme of the next couple movies, by the way, it's 3 out of 5 for the rest of this list. That's City of God, 2002. Kenjack, you have it at number 6.
Yeah, to me, that's like I would say one or two best international movie ever made. I'll put that up there with like Parasite, probably as one of my favorites ever made. It's one of those things you watch. Like I watched it when I was like probably like young 20s or something like that, not having watched a ton of international movies because I was in that same range where like I think even Bong Joon-ho talks about it, like the limitations of subtitles. Like once you get past that, you open your world up a lot more. And like that was one of those movies I watched where I was like, oh, like everyone else can do this stuff too. It's not just Hollywood. It's fantastic. The actors that they dragged off the street basically in Brazil were insane. What's your name? Alison Braga, I think, ended up obviously, I think, kind of getting more work out of it and became a bigger star. It's just amazing. It's like heartbreaking. Gives you like a look into a life that like, none of us know for sure. From their lens too, from like a native lens, not far versus like our, especially in that period to like early 2000s, it was a lot of like performative lib look at like war zones and shit like that and like trouble areas. I think looking at it from their lens was a lot cooler and just an amazing, amazing movie. Great performances across the board. Loved it.
Yeah, just incredibly thrilling, gripping. It took a lot of like 90s American crime filmmaking, I'd say, like, and even like Danny Boyle almost. There's a real Danny Boyle. Maybe it's just because it's so yellow in Brazil, but get some Danny Boyle, Scorsese, Tarantino, kind of mix it in a blender and you get this really just fucking awesome movie. I love it. I think it's also one of the few movies to get nominated at 2 different Oscars. I think it was nominated as an international feature and then followed up the next year in Best Picture, which is interesting. I think it did that. Could be wrong.
Don't
maybe
think
it was just
true.
Double.
I don't think that's accurate. You could be right, but I don't think it was nominated for Best Picture at that point.
Four nominations at the, at the 76th Academy Awards, cinematography, director, editing.
That's
and
a five.
Screenplay.
We're still in the five.
At,
picture
oh,
era,
at
right?
the previous. At the previous years, they submitted it for Best Foreign Language Film, but the year after, it went up for all the main awards. That's interesting.
Oh, okay. That's what it was. Yeah, really weird situation there.
How is that allowed? That feels
That feels bizarre.
They should have done that for that guy that won this past year. The what's-his-face from Game of Thrones is in that one movie no one's seen.
Yeah. Fucking the Tourette's movie. Yeah, I forget the name of it.
City of God. City of God. There's something about like Brazil movies that feel more lived in, and you feel like you're in, because The Secret Agent kind of had that this past year, sure. where like it's this lived in world that you feel like you're living through and like immersed in. And there's something about like Brazilian filmmaking that is kind of like unmatched at doing that. And that's 25 years apart from those movies. So yeah, City of God, 70 on my list, comes in at number 36 on our top 50 movies of the century so far. 35, another top 10 movie for Ken Jack. 24 for Gooch, 51 for me. Curious what would be on the list for Kirk and Clemmer, and that is 2008 Martin McDonagh's In Bruges at 35. Fuck. Ken Jack, as big of an In Bruges fan as anyone, I'll let you take it away.
I fucking love it so much. You want to talk about movies that don't have a lot of fat on them. There's just the screenwriting in this, the jokes, the performances, the chemistry between Gleason and Colin Farrell, I think, is as good as it gets for any sort of, like, you know, buddy movie, whatever you want to call it. And then Ralph Fiennes just comes in and just hits, like, the fucking grand slam. Like, every scene he's in is A++++. Him screaming at the phone, "You're an inanimate fucking object." And, like, the whole scene, he goes back and forth, Gleason, like, "You take that back about my fucking cunt kids." Like, it's so funny, so entertaining. Beautiful, too. Like the city of Brussels, or Bruges, rather, is just incredible. And then the ending, I think, is just about as good as it gets. The perfect, perfect, perfect ending. So, love this movie. I think you get a lot of some of the same vibes in Banshees of Inisherin, too. But this is one of my favorites. I rewatch this, like, once every 3 months.
I just love the way McDonagh writes. I really do. Mm-hmm. Like, from the characters and then just straight up to the dialogue. It's just all so sharp. It's so sharp and blends comedy and drama so well.
You use a bunch of fucking elephants. That's why. It's so
Kirk
good.
And Clemmer, where would this be for you guys? Where do you land on In Bruges?
I'm ashamed to say I haven't seen it.
I've been begging you. Own it.
I own the movie.
Seen it,
Clark? I have not seen it.
You've never
he
seen it?
He owns the fucking Blu-ray, and he
I
hasn't seen
Blu-ray.
It.
I won the Blu-ray on at a Christmas party.
He's using it as a fucking coaster. He's never seen it.
I've never seen it.
You haven't seen it?
I know. That's bad. That's bad. I'm ashamed. No excuses.
Wow.
And I own it for years.
How is that possible?
It's crazy.
Just pop, take the disc out and pop it in.
Do it today.
Just put it in. Yeah, go put it in now. Leave it on the menu screen now. Watch it later.
Isn't this terrible?
Fucking tonight.
I know. No excuses.
Just collecting dust in his house.
I know.
What about you? I know you've seen it, Kirk.
I know.
I've seen it. Yeah. I like it. Yeah. It'd be probably in like the next 50 if I did it. Not my favorite filmmaker. But yeah, I like it. And I like Ralph Fiennes in a lot. It's a great performance. He's having a fucking great time. I do like it. And I've seen it. I've seen the motion picture.
Wow. How many funny movies had Ralph Fiennes been in before that? I think it's maybe an interesting question, because I feel like he did a lot of dramatic work around then.
He recently said that he was asked to come back as Voldemort for HBO.
No shit. They want
to. And he said yes. And then they never did anything with it, apparently. But they also haven't cast it. So maybe
really?
He does come back. Yeah, he said, which he does feel like one that you shouldn't recast. Like, he is so fucking good in that. So they said they haven't recast Voldemort. So maybe they're going to be like, hey, you said yes, let's come back. Because he's not in it, obviously, for a few years. So
I know a guy. He's been doing
this one would have been a little higher on the list had I had it in the 50. It's the movie that kind of got burned by no bonus points for a third list in the top 50s, because I do have it at 51, but I do love In Bruges. 34, another movie with three people having it, all in the top 50. 38 for me, 15 for Kirk. Ken Jack has it at 50, and that is, we've talked about it recently, Ridley Scott's 2015 movie The Martian at 34.
Oh, yes.
Of our top 50 movies.
That is a great adaptation of an Andy Weir. Finally, we finally realized a good adaptation of an, you know, not the slop that America's sucking off for the last month.
No.
Terrific. Yeah, you guys remember a couple months ago we did that emotional moments top 10, and I mentioned when they rescued Damon, and I was crying in the theater when they rescued him. Great movie star performance. Great, I mean, one of the greatest directors of all time in his milieu. They don't make him like that anymore. Great. Yeah. You know, I have it high. Probably, I think when I made the list, I was surprised how high I had it. I was looking for reasons to move it down, but I was like, you know, I love this movie. I've probably watched this movie between TV, like as much as any movie this century, I think. So, yeah. I mean, I think
I would like to do our list of most rewatch movies. This is what Bill Simmons did over with the Rewatchables. Very funny list because nobody realized.
It was great, yeah.
For some reason, most people who watched it or even on the panel realized what he was doing. It wasn't his favorites. It was just what he's watched the most.
Right.
I'm curious, ours. This would be up there. This is a movie where if you give me one clip, I'm going to watch the whole movie. And that literally happened yesterday. I was in the morning. I saw an Instagram short from the movie. And I said, you know what? I said, I'm going to go watch that whole scene. I watched the whole movie. There's something about it. It makes me tear up every time I watch it. It also, there is something about this movie that don't try and replicate it if your other movies, in terms of like undercutting serious moments with a joke, and it lands every fucking time in this movie. Every time there's a serious thing and then it cuts to something funny with Matt Damon, it hits every time. And it's another role for him that's fantastic. Music selection of the movie is also awesome. The soundtrack of the movie is fantastic. Score great. Looks incredible. Just this vast, wide landscape of Mars. All the space, all the NASA stuff is like the casting of this movie is great. Jeff Daniels is perfect in his role. Like everybody just kills it. It's a favorite of mine.
I think it's much better.
I hate using they don't make these anymore, but like this is one of those experiences where I'm like, man, I want to go see like, and I like Project Hail Mary a lot, but The Martian was just was special, I thought.
I think it's a much better version of a movie I find boring, Apollo 13, which is they're stuck there and like down, then they go back and forth. I just find it to be a slog. This is like lively. You care about both stories. It's just great.
Yeah, you have that scene where he's right, and I always forget about this scene. You have this scene where he's writing to the crew to tell his parents that he's going to die.
His parents,
on Mars. And but there's just this like poetic way he goes about it. It's just it's awesome movie.
Looks great. Soundtrack like you're saying is amazing. And the soundtrack hits during that scene where he's like gumming up on them. They're coming to rescue him, and he goes up like that. Mm-hmm. I think really makes that scene too. And just I think the ensemble, like that cast, is huge. Like we talked about it. I think last time we talked about The Martian. It is insane how many hitters are. Like the 80th billed guy is like Sean Bean. Like it's crazy how many people are in this cast, and they're all really good.
Also, just great end credits too. They have like a shot of every character in the movie with their name. They're playing Love Train by the like really great end credits too. I feel like you don't always mention the end credits, but that's a good one.
Yeah, just a good little like good. It's a great I think 1-2 punch for Hail Mary, where Hail Mary is like more on the optimism side of things, and this is more of like the like I think you mentioned this when we did the review, Clemmer, like the solitude end of it, and I really appreciate it as a great Andy Weir 1-2 punch.
This was a just miss for me. I think I had it like 78 or something.
Y'all see, Andy Weir is now courting Jenna Ortega to lead the adaptation of his next novel.
Really?
Artemis.
Hearing how bad that novel is, I swear that. Jesus. And that's, we talked about the thing when we did Project Hail Mary. That's the book people don't love out of the three, right?
All I hear about is how bad it is. Correct.
That would make sense for Jenna Ortega to take it then.
Yep. Great point.
Her agent's like, let's go. It's crap.
Oh, can't wait.
The 34 on our list, top 50 movies of the century so far, The Martian. 33, We Stay in Space. Top 10 for Gooch. Number 16 for me. 57 for Ken Jack. And that is Dune Part 2 from Denis Villeneuve. 2024, it's Dune Part 2. Also got a Best Picture nomination, just like Dune. We will see where the third one lands. But Gooch, I will let you start. You have it in the top 10.
Yeah, I mean, this is, in terms of theater experience, there's very few moments in the theater that I have felt that way in my life. Just levitating out of the seat during multiple sequences. I mean, if not like the entire film. I think it's just so bold, takes it to a whole different level. It is the definition of, like, if you want to take it up a level for the sequel, he takes it up like five notches. It's crazy. The Prime Getty stuff, the new characters that come in and just knock your socks off, like Austin Butler's Fade. I think it's just, I can rewatch it, mm-hmm. it, and still just be blown away by it.
Yeah. Yeah. I stand by the fact that this is the better performance from Timothée Chalamet from that year. I think his War Tribunal scene when he does the speech and Language of the Fremen, it's powerful. It's a role that I just didn't like. When that first movie rolled, you're like, man, can he do this? And I think he proves it in spades in Dune Part Two. The silence moment with the Reverend Mother of Bene Gesserit at the end before his fight with Faye, that's fucking incredible. It also just looks like Denis Villeneuve is better than anybody in terms of scale and realizing scale and making it feel like the largest thing you've ever seen. The nuke scene in this movie, when they pan out and they fire the nukes, it's almost unfathomable how big that is. Like, how is he not actually on? Like, it's just, it's unbelievable. I fucking love this movie. I've said it ad nauseum at this point, but yeah.
Right there with you. I think the big few scenes from that, the War Tribunal scene, I think is one of the cooler scenes from the last few years, where like Timothée Chalamet kind of does a switch. Cause like through that whole beginning part of the movie, he's kind of like a dork. Like he's talking to Zendaya and he's like, well, actually in the film books thing, you got to walk this way. And then like the switch after he takes the Wizard of Water of Life. And like, he's like, I see the one path through, blah, blah, blah. And he's total flip into like, now he's the dude, I think is so cool. And obviously whole cast is great, but Chalamet, I think, it's a no doubt that was the better performance than Dylan. No question in my fucking mind. But it is great. It's a fantastic movie. It looks brilliant. And it's one I've rewatched it now a few times. And every time I rewatch it, I'm like, I cannot wait for Dune 3. Like, it makes me more excited to see this all played out.
And Kirk, I'll never forget where I was when I found out this movie got delayed.
It's one of the lowest moments of my life. Honestly.
I had Kirk take a picture of me sitting over a bowl of incredibly mediocre rigatoni in Foxborough, Massachusetts.
Yeah, it was tough. Not my franchise. I respect it. Clemmer gets mad that I don't get mad at you guys about this. I don't really know why.
Hypocrisy 101. I mean, yell about
hypocrisy. What's the hypocrisy, not, but, though?
Because he'll yell at me about Road of Perdition.
But Clemmer, we're on the island, though.
See, that's crazy. Part 2, which he also doesn't like.
No, but we're on the island. We're wrong on this one. Like, that's what I'm saying. Everyone else likes it, but us. We're on an island.
You can't be comparing Road to Perdition and Dune. I mean, the accolades of one to the other, it's completely different.
I don't know if it is that wildly different. I mean,
you don't know if it is different.
I mean,
how?
I mean, Road to Perdition also came out 25 years ago. I
know, but it got no Oscar nominations, has no imprint on society, none. Like, I mean, like this is a huge franchise.
That's fair. I get all that. But you're shitting on me for my taste. You're not shitting on them for their taste. That's
you have lousy taste. I like Creed 2 better than Dune 2. I like the Expendables 2 better than Dune 2. But I know I'm probably wrong. Like I understand that intellectually.
There's probably a better comp thing in their nose. Probably a better comp of something that I like. That's similar to, because I mean, the thing about Dune 2 is, if you don't like it, I have no problem.
I like Dune 2, it's fine. It's a lot of.
But I'm saying, like, the accolades and the love for it definitely lap Road to Perdition, for sure. I mean,
it's a more recent movie. It's hard to, like.
Clemmer, cut the fucking shit. Like, I'm with you, like, but you can't pretend that the two are the same culturally and relevant. Like, that's a fucking stupid statement.
No, that's not it. But you shit on Road to Perdition not for the relevance. You shit on because you think it's a bad movie. Or so you claim. Which
correct. I don't think Dune 2 is a bad movie. I just don't. It's not for me.
That's fine. But
for Clemmer's, you know what I'm going to do for Clemmer's birthday next whenever that rolls around as a gift to him? I'm going to defend a movie that I deserve the shit. And that's Valerian and the City of a Thousand Planets, a movie that I thoroughly enjoy. Whenever your birthday, I'm going to defend that. And then Kirk can shit on me for my taste in that movie.
Hey, Jeff, you know what? I would never make fun of you for that, buddy. It's a great
movie. We know that, Kirk.
It's a great movie.
Dune 2 is a lot of like, the baby's important. The baby's important. They tell us a lot about how important the baby is, which is good. That's good. It's like... Story-wise,
what a condescending comment that was on Dune.
That's what Dune 2 is. I, I feel like every like 30 minutes they keep reminding us. It's like, all right, we get it. Like, we know, we understand.
Wait till Dune 3 with Aaliyah. You yeah. saw her.
Anya Taylor-Joy. I like Dune 2, but like, but it,
I would save your anger, my friend. 33 is Dune Part 2, 2024 from Denis Villeneuve. I'm actually going to start not with any of the people that put this next movie on the list. I think it's more interesting to hear from Kirk and Clemmer on this one because it's not on their list. Number 32, 35th on my list, 58 from Ken Jack. And then Gucci, you have it at 4, so I'll let you go after Kirk and Clemmer. And that is The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring. Spoiler alert, Kirk and Clemmer are not going to have any of these movies. They do not like The Lord of the Rings franchise.
Frodo, tis you, Frodo. It was you all along, Frodo. Woo, 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 woo.
It was you.
Get the fuck out of here. Again, I'm not. I'm wrong. I always say this. I'm wrong. I hate the band The Who. I'm wrong. Like, I hate Dune. I hate Lord of the Rings. I hate stuff like that. I'm in the minority. I saw each one in the theater. Is this the one that won Best Picture? Is that what's up right now?
No, it's the first
no,
one.
No, that's later. This is the first one. I think I slept for like an hour. I remember I brought a sandwich in with me to see it. And I slept and I had some of the crumbs on my stomach when I woke up. It is not for me. I completely understand that I'm wrong about this, but oh, do I hate these fucking movies. And I hated the Oscars, and they all were in the same creepy like section too. They're all hairs all long and they're fat and weird. I was like, get the fuck out of here. Like, can we hell look at Nicole Kidman, please? Like, get out of here.
I will say, I understand if you don't love Dune. Again, if you don't love Dune, whatever. I understand it even more though with these, even though I do love these movies. I do get it. Like, I totally get if you'd like check out immediately on these movies. Like, there is, I love them. I think they're unbelievable. I think it's the greatest trilogy ever made. But like, I fully get if you show someone Lord of the Rings and they're like, oh brother, I'm out on this.
I like Dune a lot. I really do. I like Dune. I think Dune.
No, is me too. What I'm saying. Way there's better, something yeah. about I'm Lord of the Rings. No,
Dune one. I liked a lot. Yeah, like, that's a good movie. Dune 2, I thought was a good movie. These movies I despise. This is so much lower to me. I hate these Jesus fucking Christ. Movies. These people just walking in the woods. I hate the way they talk. I hate everything about these movies.
Just
fucking
walking ears. In the woods.
Liv Tyler with her ears. What the fuck? I don't know. It's just not for me.
She's an elf.
Like, that's true. She's an elf.
I don't know if you agree with that, Ken Jack and Gooch. Like, if I showed someone Dune in Dune 2 and they didn't love it, I wouldn't hesitate to be like, you know what? Hey, give it a go again. Or if someone told me they hated Lord of the Rings, I'd probably be like, that's all right. Like, you tried. Like, yeah. I wouldn't ask again.
I've tried with Lord of the Rings with a few people, and I've come to accept that fantasy movies and TV, sometimes it's like, you know, I made this analogy before, but like the cilantro thing, like it does not taste good to people. Some people, they ingest fantasy and they're like, I hate this. I do not like this. Clemmer, I know you're one of them. You just don't like those period. Like, you just, you're not a fan of, like,
right.
any
I
of that.
I do not like the fantasy genre. Correct.
Exactly. So for like some Avatar people, it's just like, it's too. Never going to work. Thing. Yeah. So like, for some people, it's just never, ever going to work. And like, I do think that I would agree with you, Jeff, in that like in Dune, I think there's more like almost like a Star Wars-y thing where like, I think someone could get to liking it eventually, but I think fantasy is just a little bit different. There's just a barrier for some people where it's just like, you cannot get there. And I can respect that. Doesn't mean I would ever agree with it, because I'm with Jeff. I think this is the best trilogy ever made. I think I know Gooch is like, you think number one is the best. I think it's the worst, relatively speaking, but it's still an incredible movie.
Yeah, I get the cases for each one as a favorite, because they are very close. All three, I think, or I don't know if all three actually made my ranking, but I get the case for each one as a favorite. This one, though, I think stands above the rest, because I think it's just a little bit more contained than the other two and relies less on CGI effects that I think have not aged the best in 2 and 3, but obviously the movies have aged greatly, but I think the CGI in those two do kind of stick out now that we're 25 years removed. The first one, I think, also kind of hits the themes a little bit better, especially with the Boromir character. I think just really fucking perfectly done. Mm-hmm. I love those movies. Clemmer, do you have a favorite fantasy movie, Clemmer? Like, is there one that you would hold up as a gold standard?
I have to really think about it. I don't know.
Conan?
Off the top of my head, I can't think of one.
You know what's crazy about the movies too, I think, especially with Fellowship? Like, who was the biggest star of the Fellowship cast when that movie came out?
Ooh.
Like, I don't know what you could say. Like, for an American audience member, like who is...
That's tough.
Elijah Wood?
Like, Elijah Wood as a kid actor from Deep
Sean
Impact.
Sean Astin was in Rudy, but, like, that's not...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, in that, the fact that that was the cast level on there. Like, Viggo Mortensen is playing small roles in other movies and stuff like that. And, like, Orlando Bloom, fresh out of John Rhys Davies was, like, the side character in Indiana Jones. Like, all these guys are not... There was no, like, A-list guy in this franchise. And they came in and everyone was, I think, so good, cast top to bottom in this, and across all three movies. But I think in this one, the fact that these guys came in, no A-listers, and the movie just crushes, I think it's fantastic. It's so good.
So yeah, Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring lands at 32 on our list of top 50 movies of the century. And then lastly, it was just like, it's like we kind of threw darts at our favorites here. 31, again, myself, Ken, Jack, Gooch. 20, all top 40 for me, 27 for me, Ken, Jack, 39, Gooch, 31. That is Mission Impossible Fallout from Christopher McQuarrie, 2018. One of the greatest action movies ever made.
So fucking good.
And lived up to immense pre-release hype, too. The franchise, I enjoyed the two after this. They did not reach the heights of this one. This one is just, in terms of action scenes and how it was shot, there's very few action movies that can hold a candle to this movie, I think. The motorcycle chase scene, the bathroom fight, the fight at the end, it fucking looks fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Dude, the Halo jump is like, what, the second best? And that would be the best action scene in like any other movie. Like, yeah, there's 20 of those in this. Like,
the best
crazy
use of Henry Cavill ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah, there's not been. Yeah, has Cavill done anything solid since this movie?
He's really good in Man from U.N.C.L.E. Not since this movie, but like we're saying just other stuff he's good in.
Yeah. I'm glad this made the list because I think it's not top 75 for me, but like definitely like top 150. And the Mission Impossible movies are fantastic. You said nothing holds a candle to it. I don't know. The other Mission Impossible movies kind of do, I think. I think the whole series after, like, what, part, like, five or whatever are all, like, really good.
I think what it comes down to is, like, when I'm thinking of the action sequences in Fallout, like...
They're the best.
I don't think any of the other movies hold a candle. Like, any one of them could be the best one in any of the other movies. Like, the Burj Khalifa, I think, is the only one even close.
For me, the movies that are above this in terms of, like, action are, like, the literal, like, the greatest, which aren't from this era. You know, we talk about, like, you know, the Terminators of the world, of just, you know, like, elite, the best of the best. I think this is, you know, just a small cut below those, but this is up there. Kirk, where do you land with this comparative to Dune or Lord of the Rings?
It's fine. I'm not a huge Mission Impossible. I'm not a huge Tom Cruise weird, like, every movie's just everyone looking and saying how great he is, run of the last like 25 years. It's fine. Like, to have a list where this is ahead of Nope is like a war crime. But I mean, this is what the list is. This is the beauty of these lists. This is, you know, smart people disagreeing. But yeah, it's fine. I did not like the last one. I think people did. I didn't love the last one. But this is, I get why people, of the franchise, I think this is probably the best one.
It's the weakest of the new slate of them. But still, I still enjoyed it.
This I definitely would have had. I mean, I did. It's 8 spots ahead of the one on this 10 this week. Well, I'll stay the list. So here it is. Our 40 through 31 of our top 50 movies of the century so far. Michael Clayton, 40. Nope, 39. The Worst Person in the World, 38. Get Out, 37. City of God, 36. In Bruges, 35. The Martian, 34. Dune Part 2, 33. Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring, 32. Mission Impossible Fallout, 31. Like, Get Out is the one on this list that I wish landed a little higher for sure. Like, I'm good with, I have Dune Part 2 at 16, perfectly fine with where it is. Get Out's the one that I do wish was a little higher up on the list. You're right, Kirk. I think that's the one that is going to be like Interstellar in terms of last week.
I like that. That's good. That's how it should be. Like, you know, we all
it's a very unique all agree, list. I'm looking at the
pretty boring.
Next weeks are interesting. We have a couple that all that four of us have. So there's some fun ones next week as well. Very unique list of what the next 10 are. But those are now 50 through 31 of our list. Interstellar, Wind River, Road to Perdition, The Big Short, Boyhood, Memories of Murder, Before Sunset, Memento, Sideways, Sicario, Michael Clayton, Nope, The Worst Person in the World, Get Out, City of God, In Bruges, The Martian, Dune Part 2, Fellowship of the Ring, Mission Impossible, Fallout. The first 20 movies on our top 50 movies of the century so far. We'll also do, by the way, when we end the list, we will do, what's missed. I'm trying not to say what is just off the list here. but there are some very good ones as well that people have high up there. Before we go, I wanted to rant very quickly about a movie theater industry thing, trend that I don't love. I don't love this new very, very, very far in advance movie ticket pre-sale thing that's happening. They did it with The Odyssey. They did it with Dune Part 2. It's like 20 theaters across the country for the 70mm IMAX screenings. It's 4 days. It's the first 4 days of release, one show time per day. I think they might open up like an 11 p.m. window, but it was a 7 p.m. window the first 4 days for like 20 theaters across the country. Am I crazy for thinking that the movie theater industry trying to make buying tickets difficult and feel exclusive is really stupid? Like, this is also not sour grapes. I got Dune tickets. I didn't get Odyssey, but I got my Dune tickets. But I know, like, Ken Jack, you had a fucking nightmare trying to get them. This isn't like Nike releasing new Jordans or like fucking like a Taylor Swift concert. Like, Kirk, you and I trying to get Springsteen. Right? He's only playing two shows. Yeah. Taylor Swift's only playing three shows. Like, I know there's going to be more show times and stuff, but this, again, this isn't getting like sneakers or like Pokemon cards. Like, I don't think they should be making it feel difficult to get into the theater for people. Especially because right now, like, the hype's high right now on Dune, so why not take advantage of it and put more fucking tickets on sale? Making it a difficult experience to get into the movies feels like a bad idea. That's just that. I don't know if that's a crazy take or if that's like maybe over the top.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just feel why they're doing it though. Like, they're definitely doing this so they have numbers to take to IMAX and take to the theater chains and say, you need to build more of these screens. Like, the demand is here.
But why not put more than four showtimes available over 4 days?
They may not be able to.
That's what I don't get. Look, if you want to do them early, that's fine. But put them on sale.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you don't like get a ticket for, you know, to go see Taylor Swift, someone else is going to buy that ticket. If someone doesn't get a ticket for a movie, like, they may not end up wanting to go see the movie down. I don't know. Like, I'm not saying that's going to be the case. I'm not saying this is going to be like $100 million loss decision, but it just feels like they should be making it very easy to go to the movies. that's kind of my main point. Should not feel like a chore.
I guess we know now for sure it's not moving. That we know it's staying in the. So Clemmer, in your calendar, you can put an ink now. You're good.
Okay, and I'm also putting Jumanji in.
Jumanji, yep.
Clemmer would pay $50,000 for Jumanji IMAX. He'd be
still on the wait list.
Who says I haven't?
Yeah, he's still on the IMAX wait list.
There might be a Sklenar cameo in Jumanji 3 or whatever it is. Jumanji was Jumanji 4? Is that what it is?
Sklenar will return.
Yeah, 4 or 5. Jumanji 3, one of them. But this will be the best one. They can tell. This is going to be exciting.
You have both Jumanjis on your top 50 list or no?
I have all three in my top.
All three. 10. One's not even released yet.
Wow. He reserved 15 through 11 as for just the Rock movie.
Yes,
that's the Rock section.
Call it the Rock corner. Yeah, it's good.
All right, that is it. Next week we are doing Lee Cronin's The Mummy.
Lee Cronin,
which Brandon Fraser's did not it in get it. Like okay early reviews.
Well, the same, like you said with Michael, it's kind of that thing I think where it's handpicked reviews.
Then also a movie from A24, I think is going to be their movie that we do, with Anne Hathaway.
Oh. That looks interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, it does look interesting in that,
Mother Mary.
Yeah. Mother Mary, yes. But definitely Lee Cronin's The Mummy, which we will tell you right now, Brendan Fraser is not in Lee Cronin's The Mummy.
Great marketing campaign.
Yeah. Be very aware of that. That is it, for Kirk. Ken Jack, Gooch, Clemmer, myself. We will talk to you next time.
Dedication isn't born in the light of day. It's carved in the quiet hours before the world blinks awake. At Boar's Head, we rise with a mission to deliver craftsmanship worthy of your table. A slice of something special folded into every moment worth savoring. Because dedication means delivering only the very best. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
Hey, it's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust, I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan tailored pant at work and then the happy hour right after. The Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together. And of course, their denim. Because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
Look, if you're a bigger guy like us, have you ever bought a shirt that technically fits, but it doesn't, like, actually fit? That's why this is my favorite brand of all f***ing time. One Bone. I'm in love with everything that I put on today. In fact, I would say I've never loved a brand more than One Bone. Trust me, you guys are going to romanticize getting dressed in the morning. That's what One Bone does. Go to onebone.com and upgrade to a fit that is actually built for you. Use code BARSTOOL for 20% off to see the difference firsthand. After one wear, you'll understand why standard fits don't make the cut.